Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
All right, folks, welcome into the show. We're happy to have you here joining us every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on 106.5 FM Talk. You can also catch us on the podcast. Follow up 106.5 FM Talk podcast or anywhere you get your podcast, and you can follow along with us. So we got another great show for you here tonight. It's been a big week in crypto as, you know, regulation is swirling around. The world is burning and everyone is, you know, running for shelter. But we're going to have some fun and we're going to talk about some fun things this week. Once again, Johnny Gwynn joining me tonight.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Johnny, I'm excited to have you here, man. We've got some fun stuff to talk about. And Leanne, I'm thankful to have you here tonight as well.
Thank you.
Maybe we can teach you some stuff about blockchain and crypto tonight. You're going to walk out of here being an expert.
Yay. I need that. I need extra money all the time.
Don't we all?
Shoes and purses.
Yeah, well.
And dolls.
Yes, and dolls.
She likes dolls, people.
Oh, I love Halloween.
Oh, she does love Halloween.
Well, it's your season.
And crypto has been very scary for the last 5 months. So
yeah, it fits right in.
Fits right in.
Perfect transition. All right, let's transition into the headlines, Johnny. The long-awaited, much-anticipated ETH merge happened as they moved from proof-of-work to proof-of-stake. So folks who've listened to the show before, proof-of-work is where we basically consume a substantial amount of energy in order to secure a network.
Mm-hmm.
And proof of stake is where you can own the coin and stake the coin, meaning you promise not to sell the coin. And you then are validating the transactions that way, right?
One side of it is very similar to like what a CD would be at a bank, but the other side is the validation, which you help the network actually do the transactions by part of your staking. So that's the only thing that's a little different than the holding the money like a CD.
So there was much anticipation about the merge. It's a lot like Y2K, right? What's going to happen? Yeah. And much like Y2K, nothing happened.
We don't like change. And, and so there was an ecosystem, which is a complex ecosystem. And all of a sudden they said, we are going to change the algorithm. And there was a lot of fear in the air because people were not quite sure what was going to happen.
I think it's a testament to the developers that
they
migrated without issue, which is, you know, pretty remarkable for something of that size and scope.
And I don't know if this is causation, but there was quite a big drop in ETH this week, and I think it was after the merger, because I think there's a lot of excitement of something happening bigger, and when it was a whisper in the wind, I think a lot of people either dumped or just kind of said, I made a play thinking it would go up on maybe a 10% pop, and it didn't. Then everybody kind of dropped the next day. But the nature of a market, it's the nature of a speculative market.
Buy the rumor, sell the news kind of thing. I agree that we also now have the SEC looking at ETH and Ethereum and asking if a substantial number of the validations are happening on U.S. soil, does that make it subject to U.S. regulation? And I think that's going to be a valid question. I don't know the answer. I don't think anybody knows the answer right now.
And I will tell you, on the Ethereum chain, there is a lot of projects that feel like securities and does not feel like currency. Hence the fact of, when people always ask me, is it like a stock? I'm like, some of them are like a security, but that's the thing. And if you're not compliant, one of my big words for things I buy, the big C is it even halfway compliant? Are they even trying to be compliant?
Right.
Because it's very important for me looking forward. I'm only going to hold things that are going to be legal because the government is going to come looking for their pound of flesh and they are going to get it.
I agree with that. I've kind of taken the stance previously publicly and the same way now is that no one really complains about the fact that the FAA requires air traffic controllers at airports.
Oh, but we've grown up with it. I mean,
right,
we don't know anything different.
Like, some form of government regulation is going to come to the crypto industry.
A good or bad, it's coming.
It's coming. Yeah. And so we need to hope that it comes in the form of, you know, modulated and appropriate regulation and not over-regulation, because you're right, there's so much money in these ecosystems, especially as the economy continues to tumble, that the government is going to come looking for their piece.
And what I get when I listen to these ridiculous theater Senate commissions, and when they bring in the Bitcoin people and they talk to, you know, blockchain people, the people who make the laws have no clue how this technology works.
We're still trying to explain the internet to them.
And that to me is the scariest thing, is you have people making decisions with a group of people, by the way, that want crypto to fail. Think about it. A lot of establishment financial stuff do not want this other market in place. Hence, they pay a lot of money in PACs to these politicians to probably say try to kill this thing.
Now, anytime that money's involved and politics are involved, you're going to get some dicey situations. Johnny, when we come back, I want to talk about what's going on in New York this week with Helium House DY and all the thing in that movement. I know we've talked about it on the show previously. For those of you that have been listening in, we've talked to the folks from Hexagon Wireless, the largest investor kind of in the Pollen ecosystem to deploy. We've talked to the folks from Pollen.
That was last week, right?
That was last week. And next week, we're going to talk to Joey Hiller from the Helium Foundation.
Well, you know,
we mentioned Helium before.
You know I'm a Helium head, so
I know.
Love me some Helium HNT.
And so for any of our people who don't know what that means or haven't followed those conversations, they can always go back and catch up on our conversations. You can go to the FM Talk podcast. You can go to beyondtheblockchainshow.com. where you can see all the previous episodes and where we visited with some of these folks, and Johnny's been with us along the way. When we come back from the break, we are going to talk about Helium, and we're going to talk about this big partnership with a carrier that you've heard of. It's a big name. You've heard of them before. It's a crypto and traditional business partnership.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
All right, folks, welcome back. Happy to have you joining us here. We got Leanne helping us on the board and the Johnny Gwynn in studio with us. I appreciate that, Johnny. Thanks for sitting in tonight, man.
Look,
it's always fun.
You let me on the mic and you make the mistake and I will take advantage of it because I sure enjoy it.
No one would accuse you otherwise, so we're in good shape. Johnny, another thing that we were talking about before the break is what happened in New York yesterday. Helium that we've talked about, they had a big program called Helium House, full day of presentations and news. And the big news that came out of Helium House is a partnership with T-Mobile. So we've got Helium 5G.
That's right.
Crypto, blockchain, everything we talk about. Now they've got a partnership with T-Mobile, the top three
of all telecommunication companies in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think that is going to, what is your kind of impression on what that means going forward?
I called myself a Helium head before. You got me into Helium as well. I was researching it for forever. When Dish Network invested billions of dollars into Helium, it told me that people that know this market, that know telecommunications, that know entertainment, that know what's coming, are putting billions and billions of dollars into Helium. I thought I could put a couple thousand dollars into Helium because I was chasing those. Those people are not stupid. They might do stupid things, but they are not stupid. And T-Mobile and Dish Network being a part of Helium just shows me that they are looking at that 20-year, 40-year model down the road. It might be a while before we see a profit margin, before we see any profit soon. But down the road, I think they see something. And they see what's coming.
I think you're spot on. And I also think that building a wireless communication network is no small task.
Right.
And especially a decentralized version where individual owners can be a part of this process. So when people look at kind of the trajectory of Helium over the past 12, 18 months, you see a spike in interest and you see the speculation, you see the drop. And what I think you're seeing now is the build. And it's like you're saying, follow the
big money. Yeah.
Saying follow the developers.
Yeah.
These developers are building. There are so many things that are going to happen in this Helium ecosystem, especially with the move over to Solana, which I think everyone expects that to happen.
And again, Solana would be an ecosystem much like built on the Ethereum system, on Ethereum network, the Ethereum chain. And Solana is creating an ecosystem, a place for people who have innovative ideas in this space, in the Web3 space, in the crypto space, can build on top of their already existing network.
Yeah, it's essentially allows you to outsource that blockchain development piece, right?
Yeah.
There's no reason to have to recreate the wheel.
That's right.
You have all these Solana developers that can handle the heavyweight lifting for you. You can focus on building the network.
You write an app, but you don't need to write the Mac iOS system to write your app on it. Hence the fact of Solana creates the network. You put the app on top of the network without having to reinvent the whole system.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I think, you know, with the news coming out of New York, with the T-Mobile partnership, I think people underestimate the fact that just because you don't necessarily see the proof in the pudding doesn't mean there aren't a whole lot of things that are being worked on in the background.
Correct.
Just because you don't know about it and don't hear about it doesn't mean that it's not going on.
I would love to go back and do research to hear what it was like during the first days of mobile telecommunications in general. Like, how long did it take from the initial idea and the prototype to get to the point where people had it in their car in bags? Remember?
Well, yeah. I mean, we went from pagers.
So I'd be curious. I mean, because you know it was not AT&T or Ma Bell or whoever it was at the time. They were not doing that because they, when you get that big, you're not innovative. You are slow as the slowest ship on the planet. But there's these speedboats out there. They're these young developers and these entrepreneurs, and they're creating something, and someone and these big battleships see these little small boats and they start jumping on it and start putting more money into it. I would love to see the timeline from the first prototype of a cell phone to where it got to where I would say it was mass consumer use. And I would like to see how that would affect how we see blockchain, Helium, T-Mobile, and their use of a decentralized telecommunication network.
I think that's a great point. I think we can just remind ourselves by remembering that the iPhone didn't come out until 2019. Right. I mean, 2009. The iPhone came out in 2009.
Yeah.
Before that, we weren't getting on the internet easily. Right, there was no easily connect to the internet from your phone in the user experience, and I think that's where we're going to see a huge jump in Web3, is the user experience has to get better.
Yeah,
the technology is coming along, but the user experience has to be seamless.
And then it also has to get to where the exchange of money and the exchange of these tokens, it has to get much simpler. I can tell you right now, I mean, I'm looking at something right now in the space of entertainment. I'm looking at online streaming services. There are 10,000 independent streaming services on Roku, meaning just like Netflix, there's a Johnny Gwynn Flix somewhere, right?
Right.
There's 10,000 of them out there. It's still hard for my parents to navigate the smartphone Roku, the smart TV Roku thing. They understand the Comcast world. They understand that menu, but they cannot figure out the other stuff. Now, it will get easier and more intuitive, and more people will use it because we're going in that direction. Crypto has to make that same user interface that makes it easier and easier to use, because we ain't talking about movies here and TV shows. We talking about money.
Right. That's a great point.
And I've lost $500 because I did not have the full number at the end of it, this thing called a memo, and I lost $400, and it's gone. And they said, where is it? Well, it's everywhere and nowhere.
Right.
It's gone forever. And literally, I know what I'm doing, and I still lost that money.
Right.
I did not trade on exchange after that for almost 6 weeks. Because I was so paranoid and angry.
And disheartened.
And it's got to get easier and easier. And it's coming. It's coming.
It is.
But we're watching, and that's it. Watching Helium with T-Mobile, with Dish Network, where those bigger companies will demand that we make the interfaces easier for consumers.
And we've talked about this before. If people are worried about being late to blockchain or crypto, we're not even in the first inning of the first game of a Major League Baseball. We're still in spring training. So everybody can rest easy on that. To your point on the adoption issue and how hard it is to get people to understand, the headlines this week were all about Amazon and the NFL. So the first NFL game to be streamed completely on Amazon Prime happened Thursday night.
Thursday night, yeah.
And two things happened. One, a ton of people couldn't find the game,
right.
And they were frustrated, right? But also, Amazon reported that they had the largest subscriber increase they'd ever seen in one day.
But they didn't say if people actually saw the game.
I don't know
not.
If they got to the game or
and
not, but that is a big problem.
And I think I saw the article that said they did not mention the viewer ratings. They just mentioned the biggest bit of subscriber information that they've had.
I mean, the best advice I can give for those folks is just follow the Manning cast. Whatever Manning cast is doing, be like that.
Yeah.
Don't give me just the next couple of guys giving me color and play-by-play.
Right.
Because I can get that anywhere. If I go to Amazon, I don't want the regular stream. I want maybe the regular stream is fine. Give me the next stream where it's people who are casually having a conversation, just like we're a bunch of friends watching the game together. To me, that is so much more entertaining.
But that's podcasting. That's YouTube with talk shows. Look, network TV, I will tell you right now, not innovative at all. It's going to be the smaller groups, the people on the internet that are going to change the big battleship always. The bigger the company, the bigger the group, the more established they are, the inability they have to innovate, they will take on that new show type of show, but it takes those outsiders to push the edges, and that's going to be the same with crypto as the same as with entertainment. So, and the music industry and the entertainment and the movie industry has been watching that for decades. I tell everybody in the business world, I tell everybody in the marketing world, you want to see change, watch what the small independent labels are doing in the music business and in the movie business, and they are moving the needle, not the people who are the big players that run everything.
It's a good point that you mentioned the music industry, because when we come to the back half of the show, I want to talk to you about the music industry and how the blockchain is changing the way that artists can, you know, protect their royalties, earn their royalties, and everything that goes with it. And that goes along with Netflix as well, because we can talk about that. One of the things that's changed the most for creatives in the TV and film space is through Netflix and streamings, you don't get the residuals that
correct
historically you've always had.
You get paid up front.
And Netflix won't release that information to you.
It's there. You should see that deal. That deal is we pay you up front to make the movie. Now, if you're big, like some of the bigger directors get points, but I don't know how that's working. But the idea of the models, music has changed too. Songwriters used to get paid in perpetuity for a hit song. Mm. One hit song could pay you for 20 years.
Wow.
Now it's like, they don't have that anymore, but there are things coming out that we both know we're talking about that literally will pay you when someone else buys it, and then another person buys it, and then another person buys it, and you still getting paid because you created that original piece.
It's pretty good. It's a good way to be.
I love it.
So that's going to be something big here in the music side. We're also going to see at the back half of the show, Johnny, I want to talk to you about this idea that airline tickets can be NFTs and you can sell them on the secondary market.
You mentioned this, and I love the idea of this, because imagine ticket scalpers outside of the airport.
Right?
I need two. Who's got two?
Yeah.
Who's going to Vegas?
I mean, that could be a pretty good model. You start investing early on flights, you know, like you assume the price of fuel is going to go up. So you're speculating and buying flights, you know, a year in advance or something?
I already see a secondary commodities market with the idea of someone knowing something about the way flights work and figuring that out.
Yeah.
So, well, that's cool.
That's going to be pretty interesting. Yeah. Johnny, what have you seen in the past 7 days that really jumped out to you? And we don't have to get all the way into it, but I want you to tease kind of how you're feeling this.
Okay, this is an old story, but it goes back to what you said about when people feel like I've missed the boat. Mm. Okay, it was the anniversary. I think it was like the 11th year anniversary of Paul Krugman. You know Paul Krugman?
I do. Nobel winning economist.
I'm not going to get into his ideology because I usually disagree with everything this guy says. But the guy is an economist, and 11 years ago, Bitcoin came out, and he really dumped on how stupid Bitcoin was, and he still maintains how stupid Bitcoin is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's another article that came out that said in the heyday of the internet, it was around 96, he said people are leaving the internet, and I don't see it having a real impact on the business world, no more than a fax machine. Which tells me, again, that's someone who knows economics. And literally in 1996, 97, he discounted the internet in 97 before even like all the big stuff even happened.
Well, 97 is too late to be having that, or 96 is even too late to be having that kind of position, because if you go back on YouTube or Google or wherever, you can find like interviews of like Bill Gates explaining the internet to David Letterman in like 93. So this was a public conversation we're having on David Letterman, and he was made fun of. By the way,
Gates was.
Yeah, Gates was.
Well, I remember there is a, if you go look at YouTube, there is a Good Morning America with Katie Couric and Bryant Gumbel.
Today's show,
that's it. Mm-hmm. And they are literally talking about this thing called the internet. And I kept thinking it was like late 80s. I want to say it was like 98.
Right. I mean, it
blew me away. I was like, I cannot believe that it's 1998 and they're talking about email.
As if it was something that just blew their mind. But also, it's like people, you know, I think Steve Jobs has this quote about you never ask people what they want. Because they don't know.
Because we would have faster horses and buggies or something like that. We wouldn't have cars. We'd have faster horses and buggies or something like that. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we're seeing the same thing here in technology and Web3, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But that's part of what this show is about, is we get to educate people and they get to be a part of this.
But again, you go on Twitter, you go on certain things on the internet, especially social media, you can see a lot of these projects, you see how innovative they are, and they're small groups that are doing something that... it really is revolutionary. But then as we go back to the early part of the segment, you watch this established companies, because they're watching in the periphery, they're watching them, and they know when to put that money in. Because I am going to be a part of this change one way or the other.
The smart ones, right? I mean, the smart ones are doing that.
Or they might buy it and kill it.
And buying it and shelving it is something that... Yeah,
it's a business, strategy.
For time immemorial, which is kind of disappointing as well. When we come back from the break, we are going to talk about airline tickets as NFTs.
Love it.
That's going to be pretty interesting. All right. We'll catch you in just a few minutes, folks.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. We're here on FM Talk 106.5, as we are every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Thankful to have Leanne here with us tonight and the Johnny Gwynn.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Hey, buddy. Let's talk about adoption. And people talk about, like, when is crypto going to be mainstream?
Yep.
Is there anything more mainstream than Best Buy?
Well, there used to be a Circuit City, but it went out of business. And then Best Buy definitely would be in, if it's in Mobile, it's in a lot of cities.
Best Buy is pretty mainstream.
Very mainstream.
All right. So we now have both agreed that Best Buy is mainstream.
Yes.
Tell us about why that matters for crypto.
This week, actually yesterday, I sent you a screen grab of my phone.
Did. Documenting Bitcoin. Right?
Documenting Bitcoin.
Huge which is Twitter account.
Great Twitter account for following Bitcoin. And it says, you can now buy Bitcoin hardware wallets at any Best Buy store.
I mean, that seems pretty
That's
mainstream.
A physical location, not just online. Now, a hardware wallet, if you don't know, Ledger Nano would be one, or Ledger's the company. It is a device that looks like a thumb drive, a USB thumb drive.
Okay.
Actually is a thumb drive.
Right.
You can put all of your crypto holdings onto that thumb drive, and then that is your cold storage, your hardware wallet, and then that's what you put in your safe.
Do I need a different wallet for each coin?
Some crypto is not supported by the ledger, by the hardware wallet.
Right.
But I would say the top 100 coins are definitely supported by that wallet. And I would say of my coins, only like 20% were not supported.
Yeah. So if I'm playing super deep in the decentralized exchange space,
they're weirdo ones. The coins that would not go in there were super weirdos, only on one exchange, KuCoin. Yeah.
So in general, for our listeners, what this really means now is if you want to store Bitcoin, Ethereum, most of the top 100 coins, and you don't want to keep it on an exchange.
That's right. That means no one can hack it.
That means no one can hack it. You can now put it on a thumb drive. And you can keep it in your desk drawer, your safe, wherever.
Yep.
But let's remind our listeners that if you lose the 12 seed
It's 24 word. It's 24 word password. And look, I will tell you, I had an early hardware wallet back in the day. It was really complex to use. It was very complex to figure out your passwords, your catchphrases, all your 24 words. The new ledger that you can get, again, now at Best Buy, wow, it has gotten where I think like it's intuitive and it is customer service oriented as Apple is. It explains it incredibly well, and I get very nervous transferring large amounts of coins from one thing to another. And they made it manageable for me to do it with the way they explain it and the way that it's handled. I will tell you, it is much easier now than it was 4 years ago.
And that's a wonderful, you know, point. And I think we'll say the same thing 4 months from now and then mm-hmm. 4 months from then. What we're really going to see over the next year, I think, is just the user interface, like the ability to use this stuff is going to get so much easier because it has to. The only way we're going to onboard more people into this ecosystem is
using it
with ease of use. And it has to work on my cell phone like I do any other app, or else most people are never going to get there.
And this was on a podcast 8 years ago about Bitcoin. I listened to it. It was a guy that teaches blockchain and cryptocurrency at MIT. And one of the questions was, how do you teach your students about Bitcoin? And he said, easy. I give them $100 in Bitcoin and say, go figure out how to use it. He said, we can't develop anything if they don't actually go and use it. We have to show people that, hey, this is a real world function with this. And by the way, it might not be better than cash. It might not be better than fiat. But it's different, but it might be better in different applications. I will tell you right off the bat, one of the ones that I won't say who it was, but a very good friend of mine went to talk to a very big shipping company that people might know in the area, and he showed them how if they use Bitcoin, this was 9 years ago, if they would use Bitcoin, which some ports were taking Bitcoin, how they could save millions of dollars in these fees
right.
of bank transfers. And again, it scared the heck out. And I understand it scared the heck out of them. They didn't deal with it, but they would have been saving millions of dollars in bank fees throughout the years using Bitcoin even back then.
Yeah, and I think anytime you say they will be saving a tremendous amount of money from bank fees, that tells me that banks will be earning a tremendous amount of less money, which is why you see some of the FUD coming from you know, mainstream. FUD is this term we use here in the industry. It means fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
That's right.
And the whole idea is just to create this uncertainty, create this uneasiness that the traditional system is so much more secure than these emerging systems. But I think if we were to go back and look at the amount of fines that traditional banking pays in a given year, billions, you know, of dollars in fines for their activity.
So the second coin I ever bought, cryptocurrency I ever bought, was called Algorand. Okay. Algo is traded on Coinbase, but so Bitcoin was the first I ever bought. I looked at some newer coins, and Coinbase only had like maybe 8 other coins at the time. You know, we had Bitcoin, Ethereum, you had Bitcoin Cash, you had a couple other ones. But I bought Algorand because their big thing was they showed that with Algorand, you can transfer money throughout the world in seconds. For pennies of pennies. And they gave in their little explanation of how they do it, they showed a transaction of a bank transfer between like LA to like, let's just say Switzerland, right?
Right.
It went through 3 different other banks, mm-hmm. everybody taking 7%. Just think about that. This bank wire transfer taking money and then taking money again. And then what this thing said was, there's no reason why it's going through 3 of these banks. It's just an agreement they have. And the idea was, think how much money you're out by 7%. You're roughly 21% of your money is in fees.
I mean,
and Algorand saying, you can transfer $1 million for us. It'll cost you $1.
Right. And Algo just recently was announced as the partner for FIFA. The worldwide partner.
FIFA. Algorand has their on the Ethereum chain, but they have their own ecosystem they're building, much like their competitors, Solana. They have a very interesting model. And look, I just went and bought a certain amount of money. I put a certain amount of money in 5 of these ecosystems, Solana being one. Luna, unfortunately, was one of them. Luna was the one that crashed to the ground, literally lost 99.99% of its value overnight.
Yeah, you don't lose until you sell, John.
But thank goodness. Well, this one is gone forever. It's never coming back. I mean, it was trading at $100 for one day, and 5 days later, it was trading at 1/100th of a penny.
Right.
In 2 days.
That's unfortunate.
But Algorand, great. a great, it, that is a better system, but it has to get easier to use.
Right. No, I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. And I can put Algo on my hard wallet that I buy at Best Buy.
Well, that sounds like adoption, Johnny. You can do it on your hard wallet.
It does.
At Best Buy. I mean, just about as easy as it's going to get at this point.
And I will say one thing, too. The easiest way to understand crypto is to go get a Coinbase account. Email me first, johnny@johnnygwynn.com, because I can give you a code so I get $5 and you get $5. But the idea is Coinbase will put you into this like education thing. Mm-hmm. There are 2-minute videos. And if you go through the 2-minute video and do the quiz, they will pay you in cryptocurrency.
Oh, yeah.
It's like $36. It's a great way of learning how this stuff works, and they pay you in crypto. So Coinbase, go do the learning. Algo does it. I know Fetch does it. I know a couple other coins do it. But it is a great way to earn a little extra money, earn a little money, and learn this new finance. And they explain it incredibly well.
I agree. I've done a lot of those courses. Every time I'm offered one in my Coinbase account, I take it. Because, one, it's free crypto. But, two, even if I think I understand the tokenomics or the coin's backbone, I always learn something a little bit more when I take the course.
And they show you the ins and outs so well, and they explain it not like developers, not even like us. They explain it so well to the beginner, which, trust me, I know enough to get me in trouble with this stuff. I love it when I always say to somebody, explain it to me like I'm 6 years old.
Right.
And then I'll say, okay, explain it like I'm in sixth grade. Okay, explain it like I'm 36. But I like that six-year-old explanation because it gives me the foundation, and they do a very good job on Coinbase with that educational stuff with those coins that lets you know what this coin does, why it's different from something else, and why you should be considering and putting, why you should be considering buying some of this currency.
And to your point, and to tag along, it's free money. For your time. Literally, the quizzes are 3 to 4 minutes. Take any time.
Yeah. On your phone.
On your own phone, you learn along the way. I think that's a great point. I think more crypto should be doing that. That's a great way to onboard people into your ecosystem.
And it's hard to do that. Look, I'm in graphic design. I'm in advertising. I'm in communication. I'm in persuasion. That's what I do for a living, okay? It is hard. What I love watching from a point of view of a communicator is watching how well they explain these very complex systems. They explain it in 2 or 3 minutes with this wonderful, it's not a voiceover, it literally is graphics with like closed captioning.
Right.
It's just text and graphics. And then at the end, you take a little quiz, and then they pay you your crypto, and you've learned. And you've learned, I will say, it's a great way of learning about cryptocurrency.
I think that's a great point. I just had a thought. I think businesses should pay $2, $3, $4 per person for people to learn about their business.
I agree. It's called an onboarding expense is what that's called.
That is something we should discuss further. I think that could be great for traditional businesses. Stick around after the break. We're going to come back. Johnny and I want to talk about that further because that's something interesting to me. We'll see you soon when we come back on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to the show. Happy to be here with you. We've got Leanna here with us and Johnny Gwynn, and we're talking about blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and whatever else we feel like talking about, Johnny.
And things. I don't know, Scott, what's on your mind? I know you look at like 1,000. You were great on Twitter recently. You know, the last couple of months, you have been, man, you post a lot. And I appreciate it because you are curating some really good stories for me. So what are some things that have really been sticking out to you that you've seen in the Twitter sphere out there?
The old Twitterverse, huh?
The Twitterverse.
The Twitterverse is a weird place for crypto. What I've learned is that these projects are going to change the world. We don't know which ones are going to change the world.
Yeah.
But I feel very confident that some of these are going to change the world. And what's interesting to me is with the way that Web3 is building, especially on Twitter and Discord and some of these places, the access to the team that is building the ecosystem is accessible and available.
Yep.
That is wild. Imagine if in the very beginning days of Google or Apple or Disney or any of these places, you had the ability to interact with the people that are actually building the ecosystem, and you're building the ecosystem with them, right? Because they welcome that, because they can't do in Web3. It's got to be decentralized. We can't do it alone. You're going to need the community to build it with you.
Our first love, our love before crypto was entrepreneurism. You know, right. building a business,
building it.
And what is amazing is we are watching these companies build in real time, like literally in real time with all this information. It's very transparent. And like you said, Disney wasn't sharing a whole lot of anything. Google didn't share anything. Facebook doesn't share anything now. So these other companies almost had this radical transparency of like, hey, you own a certain percentage of crypto with our company and you get to vote. You know, it's building community. So going back to what I'm saying is, it's not just building a product. It's not just building an innovation. It's also building a community around the project. Because if you do not build that community, no matter how innovative your innovation is and how your tech is, if that community is not there to help you build, you are going to fail.
I think that's exactly right. And I think that is what I notice the most. Mm. I'm not as active on Discord because I just need to learn it. You only have so much time
in
the day.
It's hard to figure out. I will tell you, it's not the easiest thing to, I would say, navigate.
Yeah. And look, when you're dealing with these crypto groups, they're all around the world, right? So apps like Discord and Telegram are places where the conversations are happening. So if you're not a part of that, you're going to miss out on the conversations. If you're just like most people we know who are on Facebook and maybe Instagram, mm-hmm. They're not interacting with any of this information, right? Very little of that happens on Facebook now. You can go find a crypto that's got a million followers on Twitter.
Groups are different.
30. Though. That's right. Private groups are different.
Yeah.
But from a public brand standpoint, they're not building a big public Facebook brand like businesses were used to seeing.
And I just saw where, and I would love to see this, how it's broken down, where Mark Zuckerberg has lost $71 billion in the last, the last 8 months, whatever. But I will tell you, Facebook has a serious, serious problem going forward because of the idea of the conversations that are not happening on the feed.
Right.
And look, and there's a million reasons for one way or the other why Facebook is, look, everything runs in cycles and everything has their moment in the sun, right? Everything was, that was the glowing thing in the sun and then something else comes around. Facebook has a serious, serious issue of not having the conversations of what I would say is the next 20 years. People are still talking about, it's more retro on Facebook than it is looking forward.
It is. And if you really want to dive deeper into it, what we're seeing now is that people under the age of 30, which is not young, I don't think. I'm getting older, but, you know, I don't think 30 is young.
Yes, it is. When you're 51, 30 is almost babyish.
Yeah, but you're not a child, right? You've been interacting with the world.
You are an adult.
It's not like we're talking about 15-year-olds, right?
You're in the formative years, put it that way.
If you want to talk about traditional technology and how much trouble they're in, Google is either third or fourth in search preference for people under the age of 30.
Wow.
It's TikTok.
TikTok, right.
YouTube. Instagram.
Which is weird because that has switched in the last probably 18 months.
Yeah. TikTok, YouTube, Instagram in one version of the three, depending on how old you are. Now, younger skews toward TikTok, older skewing toward YouTube.
Is there a content TikTok-ish app out there it's called Steam. Remember Steam?
I do remember Steam.
Steam would allow you to put up content, and if it got liked to a certain point, you earned cryptocurrency. Remember that?
I think that's a great concept.
That's still going to be the future is the idea of like, who needs agent anymore? Who needs CCA? The idea is, student athletes with the NIL stuff.
That's right.
If you can put up some content and earn, a million likes on Steam earns you, 100,000 Steam.
Right.
And that has true value of exchange. That makes it where anyone now without an agent and without an exchange can now earn money on their content. That to me is still the future.
Yeah. Somebody's going to be the YouTube killer until YouTube adopts that model.
Yeah.
Right. At some point you'll get paid in YouTube token. Just like when you buy stuff on Amazon, you'll get paid an Amazon token.
And I don't want to interrupt you, but you promised me about this airline stuff.
All right.
This crypto airline, we got to talk about crypto airline before we head out.
We can finish up next week. All right, Johnny, I saw today on Twitter, the very first thing I've seen about this is someone buying an airline ticket as an NFT.
Whoa.
Making it available for sale on the secondary market. So now we're opening up in a whole new world of airline ticket possibilities by being able to let's say something happens, I can't make that flight anymore, it was non-refundable.
Right.
Now I can just sell that NFT or that ticket to you.
Or like block seating buying like you can do at stadiums and stuff.
Exactly.
My only issue right off the bat in my head is going, Department of Homeland Security, how the heck do you get around that stuff?
I think at the end of the day, as long as when you show up to the airport, your ticket matches your name.
Right, you still have to go through all the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and you got to match it. Like, now, there's going to be a lot of details that have to get worked out. I totally understand that. But I understand this idea of how many people get hosed when they buy an airline ticket and can't use it.
Right.
Or they get bumped or something, whatever it is. But this becomes a commodity now. Now, this is something I own that I also can merchandise or sell or speculate on.
Oh,
or maybe I know that Bama's going to make the national championship and I buy a block seat of Delta tickets on that flight.
Can I get really morbid here?
No, but go.
Oh, darn.
No, but go. Go.
Okay, so do you know you and I both own a ridiculous amount of URLs we bought thinking one day we'd sell them?
That's right.
Do you know you can buy these weird URLs called like flight numbers?
Oh, I don't like that.
You can buy them in bulk because it's the idea of if one goes down, how big it is. But can you imagine having an NFT of a flight of a ticket that goes down? It would be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, well, we don't like to speculate in those types of
things. Oh, hold on. I'm just saying, but it's a reality. Hold on. I am not saying that I'm all for it. I'm just saying that is a reality.
Someone's going to do it. It's like shorting a stock. Someone's going to short a flight. Someone's going to short a tragic event, and that's going to be disappointing. And I understand people make money that way, but I will tell you.
Look, hold on.
You and I agree. Well, you and I both agree that there's a lot of ways to make money that don't feel good.
That opens a door to other. To me, that opens the door up to reciprocal bad things on the other side. Yeah. I do believe in the old karma.
I believe in karma.
Karma coin is actually a real coin too, by the way.
Really?
We'll talk about that at some time.
You know what else I want to talk about later? How the NFT market starts to affect folks in Mobile.
Why
that would matter to them. We'll talk about that one day.
That's called a tease.
It is called a tease. Maybe another time.
And I have an answer for that.
Good. We'll talk about that at another time. Folks, thanks for joining us tonight on Beyond the Blockchain. I want to thank Leanna for helping keep everything between the middle of the road. And Johnny Gwynn, as always, for jumping in and, man, being my tag team partner. I appreciate you.
Love you, Scott.